to Breaking Kayfabe with Baldrin and my new co-host, the magnificent... No, it's not him. Barry Rose, I always call you the magnificent one. You are here with us. How's it going, Barry?
It's going good, and you always do. It's magnificent and devastatingly handsome, if I recall correctly, Jeff.
I think that's what I called you back in the day. Not so much now, but, you know. So, true. Fun episode, Barry. We're going to discuss lots of stuff going on in the Arcadia Network, huh, Bear?
Wait, is there something going on that I'm not aware of?
I don't know. I may have heard a thing or two about a thing or two. So This week, as always, we'll be discussing not just pro wrestling, but life. Oh, I don't know. Movies, television, pop culture. Funny thing, Barry, last week I happened to mention that Brandon knew that last week's match was his last match that we were going to be reviewing. But I didn't realize until going back and checking, Brandon had snuck one more in on me, and I had a chance to watch it, and it's a really, really fun match to watch. The match we're reviewing this week is from October 20th, 1996, Tokyo at the old Tokyo Dome, Jushin Thunder Liger, one of my all-time favorites, versus the great Muta. Barry, a great and terrific brawl. Besides that, we are going to be looking at the recently debuted, at the time of this recording, movie El Camino. It's sort of the after show, if you will, of Breaking Bad. It's the cherry on the top, and it's gotten some interesting reviews, some very positive, some not so positive. Barry and I are going to give you our thoughts on that, and we're going to take a look at the NWA Power Show that was co-hosted by our Arcadian friend, Mr. Jim Cornette. So, Barry, what do you think? Are you about ready to take this on the road, my man?
This sounds like it's going to be an action-packed show, Jeff. Where do we start, though? What's our first door that we're going to open?
Well, first of all, I want to give a shout-out to all my friends on the Booking the Territory podcast. Apparently, we've got lots of fans over there, so fuck all you guys that hate us. And welcome to the show, because I'm sure you're fucking listening. Barry, let's talk about the new... I just stirred the pot right away. The NWA
Power. You're right in. You're going right for it, too.
I got both feet in. I'm going to get a call from Mike now, I bet. So the NWA Power Show, Barry, you've had a chance to watch it. Our friend Jim Cornette is the co-host. Tell us what you thought of the debut episode.
Yeah, I loved it. So, and it's funny, too. It's of all the shows over the last couple of weeks, and obviously AEW has, I guess, made the biggest splash. It's doing great ratings. NXT, while I think the in-ring product is probably still the strongest of all the new shows, it's struggling, and I'm not 100% sure why. But NWA Power was so much fun. And I got to say, and this was also talking to you off air, we discussed this, the in-ring action... There was nothing spectacular about any of the matches that were taking place. If anything, you know, maybe a 2.5-star match if I was going to try to put a rating on it. But the way it was laid out, you know, it definitely had an old TBS Saturday night 6:05 type of vibe to it. Definitely an 80s vibe to it. But I really enjoyed from start to finish the last episode. So I made some notes, Jeff. Why don't we go through it and we can discuss? So David Marquez, tell me, do you think it was intentional that David Marquez reminded me exactly of Freddie Miller?
It could have been. He did not have a bad wig, though.
No, he did not have a bad wig, but for some reason, David Marquez seemed to be doing his best Freddie Miller impression. And I'm assuming that was actually intentional. Joe Galli and Jim Cornette are the lead announcers. I don't really know who Joe Galli is, and I'm somewhere in the middle with him. It looks like he goes to junior high. But at the same time, Cornette was fantastic, full of enthusiasm. I thought he did a great job. Jury's out on Joe Galli, nothing against him. Nick Aldis is your NWA World's Heavyweight Champion and comes out with his valet, bodyguard, protector, Camille. I think Nick Aldis he's a fine representative of this promotion. I like the fact he's coming out in a three-piece suit. He looks good. He can cut a promo. He's certainly a fine worker. I got to say, Camille came out in a dress, Jeff, that I don't know if I will ever recover from seeing that. Oh my God. What a, and I, when I say this with all due respect as well. Oh my God, what an ass. Camille in that dress is, something that I will probably dream of. I'm 55. I figure I've got 20 more good years left on this earth. I think the next 20 years are going to be me thinking about Camille in that dress. So, Jeff, after I've just raved about Camille and her assets, give me your thoughts on Camille.
First of all, Barry, hashtag me too will be calling, because that's just absolutely deplorable that you would objectify a woman like that. That being said, whew, yeah, that was pretty nice. Anyway, I will say this. This is my problem with Camille. And it's certainly not of one of eye candy nature. She's a very attractive woman. Here's what I want to know. And I will say that this is not a problem that I strictly had with the NWA Power Show. I had this problem with AEW and NXT. If you are not a regular viewer of NXT, okay, if you are not a regular follower of the NWA before it got on television, or the, you know, NWA scene, the NWA title picture with Nick Aldis, I have not seen a lot of his matches. I've seen a couple, but I'm not somebody that follows his career regularly. And same with the guys on NXT. I know Barry's a big fan of NXT, so he knows all the background and stuff like that. And the AEW guys, I know some of them from when they were in Japan. I watched some of their stuff. But, you know, I didn't follow all the videos that they drop on YouTube and in the different, you know, social media forums. So if you don't know all these characters on the first show or the second show of all these new programs, why are you expecting, as the producers of this show or the people that are running this program, that everyone watching these shows knows who every one of the fucking characters is? I had no idea. This woman walks out with Nick Aldis, and I'm sitting there thinking, oh, it's a nice looking woman. Who is she? And she stands at ringside doing completely nothing. Now, I don't know that she's supposed to be essentially, you know, a China, a Nicola Roberts in World Class kind of character, where she's the quasi, you know, good looking bodyguard. I didn't know that. So I was sitting there texting people going, what the fuck is this girl doing standing at ringside doing nothing? Took a hell of a bump. I give her credit for that. That was pretty sweet, you know. But I can make this complaint about AEW, about NXT. Do not assume that your audience, because you're, let's be honest, you're going to have a whole new audience that's watching these shows. Is that fair to say, Barry?
Yeah, I'm brand new. Absolutely. Yeah,
and so I think that there should be some time to introduce certain characters that are on there. Oh, this is Nick Aldis. This is our NWA World Champion, of course, represented here by his valet, manager, bodyguard, whatever. Camille, give us a little fucking background on who these people are. And, you know, I will say this. You know, Jim Cornette, I listened to his podcast, and he was talking and being somewhat critical of the fact that Excalibur, as a TV announcer on AEW, nobody knows, why is this guy wearing a mask? Who is this guy? Why don't they give us the background? And he's absolutely right. But Jim, if you're going to say that about the AEW show, then I think it's fair to point out on the NWA Power show, why don't we know the background of, you know, the people? They did a nice vignette with Tim Storm about his quest for the title. That was really well done. So when Tim Storm's match came up, I knew what Tim Storm's story was. But I had no idea who the fuck this Camille was, other than that this was some really hot chick that was coming out with the NWA World Champion. And by the way, I think it's kind of passe at this point for the NWA World Champion to come out wearing the suit and being the guy that's now very affluent because he's the world champion. Gee, I think we may have seen that guy a few years back, Barry. What do you think?
Yeah, well, in his defense, too, he's been doing that for a while, and he was doing that when he was in TNA and he was Magnum or Magnus. He's British. They all dress well over in England, Jeff. You know that they all do. But I don't know if I'm ever going to get over Camille in that dress. Backstory or no backstory. And when I say backstory, I mean it. So the next thing
on my
list. I'm
making a phone call to Mrs. Rose after this recording. I can tell you that right now.
Another one? Holy shit. How about the tag squash match, which also came up? Actually, quickly to talk about the clothesline. She took that clothesline better than 99.9% of the males that I've seen take a clothesline before. She completely kept her arms down, and Aldis just railed into her with it.
And you know what was good? You're absolutely right, Barry. You're 100% right, as a matter of fact, on that point. Wow. You know what she didn't do? She didn't do the flip where she was taken completely head over, you know, ass over tea kettle.
Right.
And so it just looked like a good stiff clothesline. And so I appreciated that. I thought it was very well done. You know, kudos to her for taking the shot. And as you said, just standing there with her arms down, boom, taking the shot. So anyway, What about the tag team match, Barry?
Yeah, so the tag team match, we got these two guys. I believe they're the Dalton brothers or the Dawson brothers. Lou and I just went through this, and with my short-term memory loss, I've already forgot. But it was either the Dawson or the Dalton brothers.
It's the Dawsons.
Dawson brothers.
Richard Dawson from Hogan's Heroes and his brother.
His brother, the New York cop, Richard Dawson. But it was a tag squash match, essentially. This was an old school TBS style squash match. And Joe Galli and Jim Cornette really didn't give these guys any chance to get over, basically calling them enhancement talent right from the get go. These guys weren't bad, the Dawson brothers, but they were confronted by Eddie Kingston and then Homicide as well. And Eddie Kingston, I love Eddie Kingston, first off. And I mentioned when his name was brought up in the Facebook group yesterday, I saw him for the first time live a few years back on a House of Hardcore show. And that's the shows that Tommy Dreamer puts on, or at least used to. I think he still does. And Eddie Kingston kind of stole the show that night, and he wound up doing the job to somebody. I forget who it was, but real, real solid performer, real physical, looks stiff in the ring, innovative offense with some suplexes and power bombs that he was doing. So I'm a real big fan of this guy. And I think given the opportunity, I know he was a star in ROH several years ago, and Impact had a small role that never seemed to take off. He could be a major player, I think, in the NWA. And to me, he's kind of suited for this. So I like that. Eli Drake. Now, Jeff, I don't know about you, but I am an Eli Drake fan. And I don't know. Have you ever seen him before?
No, I did not.
Gotcha. So he came from Impact, TNA, and he was a guy that had a heel turn about 4 years ago and became this kind of smug heel. He kind of has this stone cold vibe in some ways. And I was definitely picking that up when I watched NWA Power. But I think he's going to factor into the plans of this promotion nicely. He can do it all. Great promo, solid in the ring, got a good look, and really can connect with fans as either a heel or a face. So I would think that he's going to do extremely well. Austin Idol, Jeff. Austin Idol.
Say no more. Let's talk about the commercial.
Yes, the Universal Heartthrob has his own wrestling school now, Jeff. I think it's the Universal University or something like that. Is that correct?
I don't know. But where else would you want to go to learn how to be a worker? if you want to be a wrestler, go somewhere else. But if you want to be a worker, yeah, boy, Austin Idol can teach you. That's for damn sure.
Learn from the best if you want to be a worker. And Austin Idol can tell you more about how to work in professional wrestling than just about it.
Let me tell you about the time I cashed that check from Fred Ward.
I'll tell you one thing. That's really good. One thing I really liked about the show was the camera work. Guess what? None of that herky-jerky fucking bullshit that we see from the WWE, where they've got to make it like the cameraman is running and he's having some sort of seizure. This is a fixed camera, and it, again, very reminiscent of the old TBS studios. And I think this really played into my enjoyment of this episode. Let's talk about Tim Storm for a minute, Jeff, shall we? So Tim Storm, I believe, is 53 years old. And let me give the caveat with this. You are absolutely right. The promo package they did on him being a teacher and talking about his mother, who's in the 90s, was great. But Tim Storm, if you were going to position him as your top challenger, that's a huge mistake. God bless this guy. He should not be in any sort of main event role in this company. And he supposedly is the nicest guy on the face of the earth. And I don't want to take that away, but he's in better shape than a lot of 53-year-olds, but he moved.
Barry, how old are you?
I'm in better shape, actually. But I didn't wrestle for the last 30 years, so my body isn't all beaten up, but I'm 56. But he, you know, he looks like an older guy in the ring. And when he went up to either the top or middle rope to do a cross body block.
Yeah, that was rough to look at. I know this.
Oh, it was tough. It was tough. And again, you know, he shouldn't be put in that position. I do think him losing cleanly was kind of a send off that, you know, maybe he'll be around in a special role, but I wouldn't try to work and build the company around this guy in any form. I just think he's too old, and that's not a knock. It happens to everybody. I'll tell you though, facially, he looks like Bulldog Brower to me. So,
I think he is the son of Bulldog Brower and Paul Orndorff. He looks like Paul Orndorff if he faded and put on a lot of weight. And, I mean, Tim Storm is still thick in the upper body and in the, you know, in the shoulders and stuff like that. But he looks like a guy that was past his prime. You're absolutely right. The one shot at glory kind of thing was a nice little, you know, debut episode thing. And yeah. And I think you have a good point there. I think going forward, he's the kind of guy that I could see sliding into a role, maybe as a commissioner or something like that. You know, every once in a while has to come in and kick somebody's ass. You know, the hot shot, heel kid that needs that ass whooping in the Bill Watts, Bob Armstrong role. I would have no problem with that at all. But, you know, given the guy, the one shot at glory is, you know, on the premiere episode, you know, you can debate whether that was a good idea, but he was going to lose clean. Again, great video package on the guy, you know, setting up the match. But your point is certainly valid there about, you know, having a guy that's in his 50s go after the title on the opening night, Barry.
Yeah, and I remember when he was made the NWA heavyweight champion a few years back, and I had never heard of him before. And as they explained on this debut episode, that he was a guy that bounced around and didn't really have a lot of direction in his career and was pretty much ready to retire. And then I guess won the NWA World's Heavyweight Championship, eventually lost it to Aldis, and I think we know the rest. But he's I like the role that you just brought up. I think that's going to be well suited because he comes across as a really nice guy. And that's why I almost feel guilty in saying this stuff. But at the same time, if you're going to, you know, if you're going to build a promotion that's going to be competitive with anyone, whether it's Impact, ROH, or, you know, the bigger groups that are out there, you're going to have to put forth your top talent. And I just, again, Tim Storm at 53, it's, you know, that it's just going to be tough for him. But anyways, enough. Anyways, there's another Storm that's here, and it's Cowboy James Storm. And I got to admit, this is another guy I'm a huge fan of, Jeff. So I remember him from TNA Impact, and he had some great matches. I've actually met him a couple of times, and just a super, super guy. Just real friendly, but I like him, and I looks like he's dropped a few pounds. He's gotten in shape, and I like where they're going. And I don't want to spoil anything because I've read the spoilers, but I'm happy to say James Storm is, it looks like he's going to be sticking around the NWA for a while. So I think that they've got something. I really like Aldis and Camille. I like Eddie Kingston. I like James Storm. I like Eli Drake. I think that they've got something here, and it's, you know, again, I really enjoyed the overall vibe. Even the opening and the closing credits were almost, you know, an NWA show from 30 years ago. It was NWA Worldwide, the one that was in syndication, and it just seemed to remind me of that. So I'll be watching episodes coming forth. I think it was only an hour, so it was a quick hour for me. And I hope that these guys can actually do it, because the one thing that I don't think my intelligence, and I'm not a bright guy, obviously, but I don't think
that's been established.
Obviously, let's be honest. After 2 years of listening to me, that you can definitely say that. But I think that they can really do something here, and they've got to be different. And I think that's what they're trying to do. They don't want to be like everybody else. They have to keep it up, and they have to be able to do what they're good at, and what, you know, it's a hard thing to describe. Professional, you know, if you could figure out what makes something successful in professional wrestling, you know, you'd be a millionaire, because you've got millionaires that are trying all the time that fail. You know, it happens, but this was different. And to the word of mouth, the media buzz from fans, this was the strongest of the three shows that have debuted over the last couple of weeks. And, you know, AEW coming in a close second, NXT a distant third at this point, and AEW I like a lot, but there really was something about this. And you said this to me, and I look, you're 100% right with this. This was a nostalgic feel for a lot of people. And I would absolutely agree with that this was something that I think a lot of people watching this were like, God, this brings me back to my youth, my teen years, when I was watching TBS and watching a studio product. And that's what I felt. I really enjoyed it.
Well, you know, I will say that, first of all, let me just, with a caveat, I really enjoyed the show. You're absolutely right. It was like taking a little walk back in time and, you know, sitting on my couch. Hello, Gunny. On a Saturday night at 6:05 back in the 80s and enjoying TBS. My only concern is, let's be honest, the audience for this show has to be a little bit older. Okay. It's got to be guys. I don't want to say just, you know, where you're pigeonholing. It's just guys, you know, in our general age group. Of course, there are younger fans who have interest in wrestling history and, you know, things like that. But, you know, AEW is tapping into that disenfranchised WWE fan, if you will. And, you know, the NXT portion is tapping into that sort of disenfranchised WWE fan. Yes. Who wants to see the guys that are really good workers. But who are the people that you know, NWA Power is tapping into? It's the old fan that completely hates the WWE, probably, you know, hates Vince McMahon, hates Triple H. So they're watching it almost out of spite. And, you know, they're watching it. They're getting exactly what they wanted, because, you know, Jim Cornette and the guys in charge of that are giving them exactly what they've lost, what they used to have 30 plus years ago. And in that first episode, boom, absolutely knocked it out of the park. No question about it. My question is, long term, is this sustainable with an audience? You know, I used to call it, and I may have referenced it here once or twice, Barry, that one of the things the WWE did to wrestling during the 80s is it made it like an MTV video. All the matches less than 5 minutes on TV. It was like you go in, you hit your move, bada boom, there's the intro music. And it became very Pavlovian, where, you know, once the guy's, you know, music hit, that's when the fans turned and started craning their neck to see who's coming out. Remember the Royal Rumble? You know, they go down to 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and they go down and they, you know, they crane their neck to see who's the next guy coming out. And that's what, you know, they're not built for a match that's going to be 25 minutes on television or something like that. So, you know, an audience of people that are, you know, our kids' age, you know, your daughter being the youngest, my son being the oldest out of those four, you know, is someone within those age groups, which is like, what are we talking, 15 to about 29, are they going to be tuned in? Because that's going to be the ones that are going to be spending lots and lots of cash, as they do on, you know, the AEW stuff and the WWE stuff. And is it going to be sustainable to an audience of that age group? What do you think, Bear?
Yeah, that's a really, really good point, too. And I would have to agree. And I think, you know, if you look at the success of the WWE, the fact that it was geared towards kids for years, because kids would then bring their parents who spent all the money and would buy them all the shirts and the foam fingers and all the other fucking tchotchke bullshit. But I don't, you know, I don't see the NWA ever being as big as obviously the WWE or even AEW. I think the NWA is going to fall more into that next tier, which is ROH and I guess Impact. If I'm looking at it that way, it's going to be more of an ROH Impact kind of thing. Where,
well, you know, are they going to be? Are they going to be satisfied with that niche, though? Or are they, you know, when TNA was at their most popular, were they satisfied being number two, or did they want to, you know, push the envelope even further? And, you know, really gets a niche and they really, you know, get an audience and start holding it, are they going to be satisfied with that audience, or are they going to want to push it even further and get a bigger audience base, you know, and then, you know, risk losing those people that were looking back and reaching out for the past? You know, it's kind of a slippery slope.
It's a slippery slope, too.
Which, by the way, is the first time I think we've ever used the term slippery slope here on this show.
Yeah. Speaking of slippery slope, did you happen to catch Camille on this episode of Power? She just absolutely is just stunning. But yeah,
I think you mentioned that, Barry.
I haven't. I'm going to go back and just watch that one segment over and over and over because I'm completely fascinated by her.
Mrs. Rose is going to have to excuse you while you go to the restroom for a couple of minutes, I think.
My bags are already packed, I think. So. They're by the front door. Car is running. I got to go. So here's the thing. In understanding the limitations of what they are, they should be very happy if they can draw a house show and draw 1,000 people. That would be very, in my opinion, that would be very successful. If they can get ratings for a TV show, they're obviously doing it on YouTube right now, and you and I are trying to break into the YouTube world. And Jeff, if we haven't mentioned it, please, Jeff, will you mention it to all of our listeners?
Breaking Kayfabe with Bowdrin and Barry, the YouTube channel. You, that guy. Yeah. You know, don't look away. You know who I'm talking to. You haven't hit the subscribe button yet, have you? No. But you're going to show up in Lutz, Florida. Oh, by the way, did we mention Lutz, Florida this week, Barry? The fan fest? You're going to show up in Lutz and go, oh, I love you guys. You guys are great. Oh, subscribe. Oh, no, there's a problem with my phone, man. I can't. Uh-huh. Yeah. Don't expect me to buy you a drink at the beer garden. Are we going to go to the beer garden?
Exactly. I think so. I think we're going to be hitting – I know we're hitting Culver's.
I will tell you, I will be having my eye drops that night. Yeah. I will not be begging off because of my contact lenses. I can tell you that.
Yeah. I'm so looking forward to it basically for the stories. Will there be another attempted threesome that will take place? Will the cops be called? Will girls from the beer garden be coming over trying to hustle 79-year-old men in the lobby of the hotel? We'll see, but I'm always excited about it.
Who will be trying to put themselves over the strongest? I won't mention the name of the person who tried desperately to get himself over with everybody, but you know, there'll be somebody.
Last fan fest or the one before that?
No, at the last fan fest, there was someone who was a little bit louder, kept trying to mention lots of things about himself. I'm not going to mention any names. You know me. I'm Mr. Kayfabe here. You know.
You are. And I'm actually.
I'll tell you when we're done recording.
All right. Or just text me right now so I can laugh. I certainly remember who was trying to put themselves over at the one before the last one. And you and I basically talked about that for a whole while. Oh, yeah. You're 100% right. Yeah. I don't know if you just heard the ding, but I just got the text. Yeah. God bless him. Yeah. Boy, he was. Oh, man.
I identified him as a male. There we go.
Yeah. Okay. Sure.
All you ladies are safe.
that removes the two women that were there. Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, all right. Good stuff.
Wrap it up. We absolutely love the NWA show. I hope it's sustainable because it's a lot of fun. It adds another choice for the wrestling viewer, besides the WWE, besides the NXT, besides the AEW. And it's always good to have as many options as possible. It's like having territories, Barry. It's good stuff. It's good. We definitely would, if you haven't, I can't imagine anyone that listens to this show that hasn't had a chance yet. But if you haven't had a chance yet, I encourage you to seek it out on YouTube. Jim Cornette is there in fine fashion with the host, Galley. What's his name? First name?
Joe Galley.
Joe Galley. And who's the Freddie Miller guy?
David Marquez.
Okay. Not to be confused with Alex Marvez, who's on AEW, but that's another story for another time. Okay. Now, Barry, it's time to get to our match of the week.
Oh,
our match of the week, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, was recommended by our friend Brandon New. Brandon, who I believe was at the last fan fest. Is he going to be at this one? Has he bought a ticket yet, Barry? Do you know?
He will. I believe Brandon will not be making this fan fest. I believe he was in the hospital recently, or he's had some, I don't want to get into his health issues online, but
yeah, HIPAA.
Yeah, exactly. But, no, I don't think Brandon will be making it, and we'll miss Brandon.
We'll use that opportunity to completely talk shit about him while we're at the bar. So
yes.
That'll be fun. So, but anyway, Brandon recommended his last match that he recommended to me was Jushin Thunder Liger versus the Great Muta from October 20th, 1996 in the Tokyo Dome. Barry, you had a chance to watch this. Tell the folks what you thought of this match.
Yeah, so this is an okay match. This is not anything special. The first half, maybe first three quarters of this match, it's just standard fare. There's nothing here that stands out. It's almost the crowd's not into it. The crowd's dead. There's no real heat. And there's no real flow to the match. It's, you know, it's like one kind of Liger will do his stuff. Muda gets his stuff in, but there's no chain wrestling. There's no flow to this thing. And it's dead. The crowd is just really dead. You know, there's a spot where Muda pile drives Liger on a table and the table breaks. And you've said it numerous times about things that should be finishers and not be transitional maneuvers. And to me, it was just kind of odd. Like, you know, you pile drive a guy outside the ring onto a table, the table snaps in two and the match continues. You know, in the old days, Flair was out for 3 months after that happened. Right.
Yeah. So Liger was out for about 30 seconds.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just kind of weird to me that they do that. Muda sets up Liger for a running clothesline, and he goes back what looks to be about a block, you know, and starts running and gives Liger a clothesline. And it's like, yeah, whatever. I don't know. There was like nothing to it. I didn't like the match until the last third of the match, when Muda rips the mask off of Liger and we see the debut, the first time ever, of Kishin Liger. And from a historical perspective, it's pretty cool, because I remember watching this when it first happened and it was a big deal. Like, that was absolutely fucking huge, that Kishin Liger had appeared. And it made you forget that the match taking place was nothing special, but in any shape or form. And then at that point, Liger goes nuts. And is it a heel turn, Jeff? It's not really a heel turn, right? It's just a guy that has been pushed too far. Muda is definitely the heel here, but Liger's a guy that's been disrespected, pushed too far. And then this other alter ego comes out. He goes nuts. He's nailing Muda with these unprotected chair shots, and just going berserk. And Muda gets in some offense literally the last 30 to 45 seconds of the match and wins. And then that's it, and they wrap it up. But, you know, I don't love this match. Certainly looking back at this 23 years later, there's nothing that is special about this at all. But I remember the impact this match had 23 years ago, and it was a big deal.
Well, I am going to respectfully disagree with you, because I absolutely loved this match as a brawl. So here's a couple of things. First of all, as you use the historical context verbiage, what we have here, Keiji Muto is the main eventer in New Japan. The Great Muta is presented as sort of the dark alter ego of Keiji Muto. And in the frame of this, Jushin Liger is the almost the baby face who's a hero of children. Kishin Liger is the dark alter ego of Jushin Liger. So you have the emergence of two dark alter egos of these, you know, Keiji Muto and Jushin Liger, who are super baby faces within the New Japan world at this point. So let me just go over my notes here. First of all, terrific entrances by both. You got to say that's one thing that you can't deny. And let me just say that when it comes to designing great looking outfits, nobody does it better than the Japanese guys. And, you know, when Keiji Muto came out, he's got a fucking dragon lying on his shoulders, man. I mean, I was going, that is badass. And I don't know if he's ever worn it again or if it was a one-off, but it looks absolutely incredible. And as I was watching him do that, I'm sitting there thinking, you know, I remember all those, you know, outfits that the WWE at this point was trying to do, and it was Max Moon and the Gobbledygooker. And, you know, somehow they're creating this outfit for the Great Muta that involves a dragon being on his shoulder. And I'm going, but these guys weren't watching any Japanese wrestling where they could go, you know, maybe we need to contact the artist that designed that outfit, have him come over to Stamford, Connecticut, or down to Atlanta for a couple weeks and come up with something in the prop department. I mean, come on. How fucking lame were those outfits that were created by the WWE and the WCW back in the day? But super, super props to, you know, New Japan for the outfit design on both these costumes and the accessories coming to the ring. Now, I love that one of your all-time favorites, Misawa Tori, complete with the ponytail at this point, Barry. One of the things I love throughout this match, I love that we have two Japanese wrestlers. We're in the Tokyo Dome in Tokyo, Japan, and Misawa Tori is yelling out instructions in English. That just cracked me up. You know, Muta, Muta, no more, no more. You stop, you stop. I was going, why is he yelling English at these guys? And I thought that was very funny. The very beginning of the match, I really loved when Muta, who, by the way, I don't know that he's really a character who's like supposed to be scaring the fans, you know, as much as they're like enjoying this other side of him. But when he rolls out of the ring and grabs the gate at the very beginning of the match and like he fakes like he's going to blow the mist, I mean, the crowd completely scatters. And it's like, you know, people at an amusement park ride. They're just enjoying the visceral thrill of it. And that was, I thought, a pretty cool spot. Let me see here. It was a great rolling kick by Liger. He did a couple of rolling kicks into the corner on Muta. I always love that spot when Liger did the rolling kick. You mentioned it, the Randy Savage, Ricky Morton spot from Memphis, where Muta hits the pile driver through the table on Liger. It was an amazing looking spot. He then throws the table and he starts attacking Liger with a stretcher. He does everything but pull out a gun and basically shoot Liger. And of course, naturally, that's not enough to put him down for the three count. Then Liger jumps up from the pile driver. And, you know, they do the bit where they, and I have to say, this is like probably one of my least favorite spots that they seem to do in Japan, the 50-yard running clothesline, you know, because they lay the guy on the ground. And they, why would anybody using, let's just use the context of things that you would see in a real fight, okay? Let me go back. I'm gonna give you about 50 yards. Okay, I'm going to start running. The guy's going to stand there and let me clothesline him down to the floor. I just don't – I'd never understood that spot. I think it looks horrible. It's very exposing the business. I know we're way past that at this point, Barry, but it just, I think it's a horrible looking spot. But then there's a situation where Muto goes under the ring. He starts making all this racket and noise. Liger goes under the ring and then under the platform that leads back to the back. And they don't know if they're doing it. And then they come up from her. Muta attacks him with a broom that he found under the ring. So, you know, it's a really fun brawl. And then towards the end of the match, maybe about 4 or 5 minutes left, he rips the mask off of Liger, and Liger is down covering his face. And when Muta comes back into the ring, that's when Kishin Liger is revealed, and huge pop from the crowd. And you're absolutely right. You know, one of the things about dome shows, Barry, is, you know, there seems to be almost like an echo. No matter how big the spot is, it like takes a while for the wave of sound to hit the ring after you've done that. And I've heard people that have worked at dome shows before, whether it's this country or Japan or wherever, that, you know, it, sometimes it takes a while for that reaction to come from the, you know, the wave of sound. But but when he does that, a huge pop from the crowd, it looks really cool as he tears his own suit off. And then you see the emergence of Kishin Liger. He goes after Muta with a chair. He does a beautiful Randy Savage leap off the top rope down to the floor with a chair and hits Muta. That's a great looking spot. Dangerous looking as hell, but it was a great looking spot. He then tries to hit. He lines up a table in the corner, tries to hit Muta with a spike. And the spike misses Muta, goes into the table. By the way, I think that's a move that they did really just recently. Tried to do that on Minoru Suzuki on New Japan. But anyway, he misses it. Muta then hits him with the deadly red mist. Of course, that's deadlier than the green mist. I think we've established that, Barry. And then hits the moonsault, gets the cover for the win. I thought, with everything, including the historical context of the debut of the Kishin Liger character, what was this like, you know, Ricky Steamboat and Ric Flair from Nashville? No, it was a really fun brawl. I don't really know that that's something that New Japan ever did as well as All Japan did, the out of control brawl. So it was a little different, especially from, you know, somebody like Liger, who's not really known as a brawler as much as he is a technical wrestler. I thought this was very different. I don't think it was to, you know, the Fit Finley, Steven Regal standard that Brandon, I think that was the best match that Brandon recommended, but I really like this one. And I give it a solid thumbs up. We'll post it on the board. You folks can give your opinion on whether or not you thought it was a good match or a complete house of garbage like Barry thought. Well, I don't know if you'd say that, would you, Barry?
No, it definitely was. It was an average match that, again, once Kishin appeared, things really took off, and I that was very exciting. Prior to that, yeah, I just don't see it. But what are you going to do? So this is Brandon New again. It's just like,
yeah, this is it for Brandon.
Weeks,
he's you know,
7 weeks
to get,
in a row.
Yeah, he's starting to get a little bit of full of himself, and so, you know, we don't want that to happen. But so anyway, now Barry, it is time That's the smooth transition of the week. It's time for us to take a look at the recently debuted on Netflix movie El Camino. El Camino, of course, is the addendum, if you will, to the TV series Breaking Bad, which, let's be honest with you, Barry, Breaking Bad got to be up there in the pantheon of all-time great TV shows. I don't think there's any dispute of that. Now that I say that, of course, I will say I posted a little comment in our group, and I said, is anybody watching it? And there was one, I'm trying to think, I want to point this guy out. He said he did not like the show. Wait a minute. Hold on.
He didn't like Breaking Bad.
Okay, here, Mark Russ. I lost interest in Breaking Bad after the first season. What show were you watching, Mark?
Jeff, okay. I can clear this up for you. Mark Russ, also not a fan of Tom Petty.
No, wait a minute. Now you just pissed me off right now. Now Mark and I are going to have to go down to the local watering hole and possibly throw down, because you can talk shit about Breaking Bad. You can have your opinion, but ain't nobody going to talk bad about my man TP in front of me. So, but we did have a chance. We put it on the board, and I said, folks, what do you think about the show El Camino? Have you had a chance to watch it? We had some people that were very, very politely reacted and gave their thoughts. And so before we go, I did have one person send in a review. I reached out to a couple people. I had one person respond with the review. Barry, did you get that review?
I did, but Jeff, okay. Why don't you go ahead and read it for us?
Well, now that you've done that and thrown that at me, because I wasn't expecting you to do that. Okay, from our old friend John Pantalone. He says, here it goes, El Camino, the Breaking Bad movie. This wasn't so much a movie as it was episode 63 of the Breaking Bad show. Within the previous 62 episodes, we learned about the sad fates of Gus, Mike, Walt, and Saul's. It was necessary for Jesse to shine even just a little, and the conclusion didn't disappoint, but it didn't want me looking for more. First of all, the good. I love the flashback sequences using Mike, Todd, and Walt to help advance Jesse's character from a dullard to a streetwise man on a mission to find a peaceful existence while battling both the police department and PTSD. The gunfight was great. If Jesse were to rise, he needed to be wise, and he was. Quite a character evolution for sure. The interactions with Robert Forster's character – hold on, let's just stop right there. Barry, let's raise an adult beverage to the memory of the great character actor Robert Forster, who we lost.
Hold on. All right. It's in the air. All right.
There you go, you sir. What a great, great character actor, veteran of not only this show, but of Jackie Brown and many other movies. Terrific character actor. So perhaps made the movie for me. I really only know him from Jackie Brown, the Delta Force movies, but I knew enough to say he was such a likable screen presence, kind of like Tom Selleck, but off the radar. Robert Forster getting the Tom Selleck comparison there. Okay, now the bad. There were a few holes, starting with the story arc with Welder Randy and his buddy. How did they know about the money? Also, of the $60 million that they pilfered from Walt, why did Todd only have less than $1 million? Also, I felt the story did not emphasize the manhunt well enough. Skinny Pete suggested he keep the beard, which a skillful actor such as Aaron Paul could have used to bring additional suspense to the film, a la the opposite of the movie The Fugitive, where Harrison Ford shaved his beard. Plus, it would have made the scenes in Alaska seem less forced if he has been clean-shaven for just that portion. Conclusion, I give it an 8.2 out of 10. They put a nice, entertaining two-hour Breaking Bad show to please most of their fans. And that's from John Pantalone, whose real name, I believe, he broke kayfabe to me is John Cecchetti. So,
well, let me ask you a question. Are you supposed to be breaking kayfabe?
Yeah, no, he told me I could break kayfabe.
He did. Okay. I've known John for at least a couple of years. I think it was prior to even breaking kayfabe.
I'm going
to
just show you, Barry. John writes, but you must break kayfabe on my show, on the show. It's really John Cecchetti, or it's actually Check Eddie, excuse me. And so, yes, he gave me written permission. So, you don't need to go see Stephen P. New.
I didn't even know that John Pantalone was a kayfabe name. I actually thought that was his name.
I think we have a couple of kayfabe names in the group, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, which is really funny when you stop and think about it. So just going through John's review, I just want to pick apart, because that's what we can do with hindsight, where he says, the interactions with Robert Forster's character perhaps made the movie for me. I would agree with that, too. I thought he was fantastic. I really only know him from Jackie Brown, the Delta Force movies, but I knew enough to say he had such a likable screen presence. And I that's interesting, because in those Delta Force movies, he played a murdering Middle Eastern terrorist. Right, he was a terrorist who was killing people, but he was a likable terrorist.
He seems like a nice guy.
Yeah, he did too, but he really was. He's so good in this role. And so we should say, too, there's going to be a lot
of... Sorry, I gotta, it just made me think of that movie, The Delta Force, when he's asking all the Jews, raise your hand. He was likable. Only the Jews, raise your hand.
It's Martin Balsam in that movie, right?
Yeah, the great Martin Balsam, of course.
Yeah. Martin Balsam, Shelley Winters. Was it Shelley Winters?
Shelley sweating as always.
Sweating. It's a that's such an unusual movie. So there will be a lot of spoilers for El Camino. So if you have not seen it or viewed it yet, it is on Netflix. It is just debuted, I want to say, 3 days ago. You may want to lower the volume for the next 15 or so minutes, but because we are going to give away a lot of the story. Jeff, I really enjoyed it. Is it perfect? Absolutely not. Does it fit into and does it have the whole vibe of Breaking Bad? It absolutely does. I think the highlights for me, Jesse Pinkman has come such a long way from this high school kid that was making meth with Walter White to what he is now. And he pulls it off as an actor. I don't think that Aaron Paul is ever going to be able to do anything other than Jesse Pinkman, which is a shame. Because I know that he's had a TV show and a couple of movies since the show went off the air and nothing has been successful for him. But as an actor, he really shines in this. And this is his. This isn't anybody else's show. This is 2 hours of Jesse Pinkman. And he carries it. And he carries it extremely well. I was happy to see Skinny Pete and Badger. And I guess I'm a little disappointed because they were only in it for just a few minutes. But Skinny Pete, captivating. He looks like a meth dealer. He looks like a guy that you would be getting your meth from. And Badger, and I mentioned to you in this in a phone conversation, I've been watching a television show in syndication called Mom, starring Anna Faris and Allison Janney. Probably the last month, and I've seen a shitload of episodes at this point. And he plays the ex-husband, the guy who plays Badger, plays the ex-husband of Anna Faris's character. And I had no idea it was him, and it is him. But yeah, it was great to see that.
Credit, Barry, just real quick. Badger played by the actor Matt Jones, and Skinny Pete played by Charles Baker, both terrific in their roles.
Yeah, they really do a great job too. Mike shows up. Is Mike Ehrentraut, which is what's the guy's Jonathan Banks?
Jonathan Banks, yes.
Yeah, who's always been a heavy in movies, whether it was Beverly Hills Cop, the first one, or even the movie with John Candy and Eugene Levy. What was that movie where they were security guards?
Oh God!
Remember,
this is where Lou's gonna text us. It was, Armed. What was it? Armed and Dangerous. Yeah. Okay.
Yes. With a young Meg Ryan, pre-plastic surgery, Meg Ryan.
That's still good looking, Meg Ryan.
Yeah. Falling in love with Eugene Levy.
Seems reasonable.
Exactly. If you could ever picture that in a universe. And her father, played by the late, great Robert Loggia, who's was in a million movies, including Scarface, which he was so good in. So, I don't know where the fuck I was going with this.
You got off track with Armed and Dangerous.
Yeah, but in any case, I really enjoyed Aaron Paul in this. And there were some scenes in this movie that were really tense. So in a nutshell, he's been captured by Todd and Todd's group. And Todd is the actor Jesse Plemons, who is married to Kirsten Dunst, and I believe they have a child together. A fine actor. He's been in a bunch of movies and a great episode of Black Mirror, the TV show. And he's a real fucking psychopath, the way that he can just switch it on and off. But Jesse obviously has been through a lot. They kind of keep him in a cage underneath the ground. And
it's not kind of, they do.
They do. Yeah. I guess it's a cage, right? And he's covered in scars all over his body and his face. So they've obviously beating the shit out of him. He's got PTSD. He is just a mess. And there's a couple of great scenes. And one, you know, when he goes to the house to get the money, and two cops show up, and, you know, he takes one of the cops hostage. They basically convince him to give up his gun, and he does. Turns out they're not cops, and a lot takes place going forward. But the scene where he gets his revenge when he goes to Candy Welding, and he is just, you know, first the hookers are there, and they get out in this big
SUV. They're strippers. They're professional women, not hookers.
I had them as hookers. I don't know, but it's a great scene. I think if I was to find fault with this, is that the ending was almost anticlimactic. It was still a nice ending, but I think there could have been something that took place. I get it. They had to wrap up the show. Again, spoiler alert, he's going to Alaska, and he's got a new identity, and he's driving a car to Alaska. And I, you know, that is the ending, but you have this great scene where he kills these two guys, and one guy apparently that used to torture him, and he kills these two guys at the welding place. And it's such a, you know, it's a showdown. It's like an old Wild West showdown where they're doing a draw and whoever draws first. And I just thought it was fantastic. And then the next scene essentially comes forth where Robert Forster has taken him to a meeting place and has given him a car, and he's driving off to Alaska, and that's it. So I liked it. I think the ending maybe could have been a little more impactful, but maybe they also left the door open that Pinkman would get his own show, much like, you know, Better Call Saul, who is not in this at all, which I was a little surprised. I thought maybe we would see Better Call Saul in this. We did not. We do see Mike Jonathan Banks in a scene. It is a flashback, no doubt, because he was killed. And then we see Walter White. And Walter White, it's a brief scene that maybe lasts 10 minutes, and it's a flashback because within the first 10 or 15 minutes of this movie, they've announced that Walter White is dead. And he certainly did die. So I would give this a big thumbs up. I really enjoyed it. Anticlimactic, I guess. Aaron Paul just does a bang up job. It's a shame that he's going to be pigeonholed for the rest of his career as Pinkman, but I'll probably go back and even watch this a second time.
Well, I actually had a chance to watch this show this morning, so I have a really fresh take on this. I told Barry that one of the things before I started watching this show was that my sister had contacted me. I turned my sister, Reen, into a Breaking Bad fan after I started putting on Facebook, watching each episode. And people, you know, not in our community, on my own personal page, were saying, oh, my God, you're going to love this show. And my sister saw these reactions, and she starts watching the show. And she starts watching it, and my mom starts watching it. And I'm just having trouble. You know, I used to have trouble thinking, you know, and trying to come to grips with my mom watching Game of Thrones and some of the stuff that happened on that. But my mom starts watching the meth dealers on Breaking Bad was kind of amusing to me. But my sister, after watching this movie, texts me, and she goes, you know, I was really kind of disappointed in it. I had a hard time keeping track of it. It was a little confusing. So I went into this with lowered expectations. That's the point of me saying this. So when it started, it has the real Breaking Bad mood and vibe about it, which I really liked and I really appreciated. And the one of the things about the show that I really appreciated and really liked is and I think we've made this comparison. I can't remember the last time we made this comparison, but, you know, we talked about how Tarantino will latch onto the minutiae of everyday conversation in life. Yes. And you know, that's one thing as we started watching, you know, the scene where Skinny Pete and Badger are playing video games and they're start, you know, well, what's the word they're using that you're not, cortexing or vortexing or something like that, that there's a word they use about the video game, and he's criticizing about the way he's playing the video games. And so they start going back and forth at one another. And it reminded me of the scene from The 40-Year-Old Virgin when, when Paul Rudd and Seth Rogen are playing video games and they just start putting each other down for about 10 minutes talking about, oh, you're this way because of this. And it was really funny. And that's what this scene reminded me of. And it was a really good verbal interplay between the two guys. And then, of course, Jesse Pinkman shows up on their doorstep after surviving what he's been through and all that. But just the minutia, you know, one of the things, there's a scene where Todd, and by the way, the one thing I noticed about, and tell me if you noticed this, Barry, is Todd apparently may have eaten half the other guy that played Todd because the actor put on some weight. So I was going, boy, Todd sure put on some LBs there. I mean, I'm not, you know, fat shaming, but he was a little bit heavier than when this movie, when Breaking Bad first came out, that's for sure. So I really love the fact that when Todd is driving, they've got the body of the maid in the back of the truck. And they've also got Jesse is lying next to the body that's in a carpet, and they start playing the song "Sharing the Night Together" by Dr. Hook.
Yeah.
And Todd's in the front seat just going, "Oh, we could share in the night together." And it just absolutely was side splitting how in the midst of, you know, death, murder, they're burying this woman in the middle of the damn, you know, desert. And he's up there, you know, humming a 70s song from the group Dr. Hook. It just absolutely, that's the kind of minutia I love in a movie. And it really just captivated me. Want to point out one of the things that you loved about this was the way they did these callbacks on, you know, there was the brief scene with Mike and the brief scene with Walter and so many other guys that were, you know, other than Saul, you know, it seemed like there were so many callbacks. Old Joe, the tow truck driver, played by Larry Hankin. Yes. Most famous for his Seinfeld appearance. And when Seinfeld was within the show, was doing the TV show, and he played Kramer on the TV show. He's a, you know, and Tom Bauer, who plays the nosy neighbor from across the hall at the apartment. He's a veteran character actor. Tess Harper from Tender Mercies with Robert Duvall, you know. Yep. But just, and here's what I love. Barry, I'm just going to throw this out because I thought when I saw this person, I thought it was them, but I wasn't positive until the show was over. Did you recognize, in fact, the person that was in the vacuum store with Robert Forster?
That was the old lady, right?
Yes.
No, who was that?
It was Marla Gibbs, best known from The Jeffersons and 227. I was like, wait a minute, that voice sounds really familiar. And it's friggin' Marla Gibbs getting casual five minute walk on scene where she's a customer in a vacuum store. I thought that was kind of funny. I love when shows do that. Yeah. So
I did not pick that up. I did not pick that up at all.
Well, then I'll take points for that. Thank you.
Absolutely.
But there's stuff that's going on here that I'll be honest with you. You know, as I said, my sister said it was a little bit confusing. There were parts of this that I was kind of like, now, wait a minute, who is this guy again? Because, you know, quite honestly, it's been over a year since I watched the show. I only watched it one time. I'm talking about Breaking Bad, of course. So it's not like I'm not one of these guys that's seen it five times and I know every single character. I know every single character's, you know, background and what, you know, made them do what they did and what made them tick. So a couple of the people, I was like, wait a minute, who is this guy like with the welders? Who are these guys again? And then, of course, oh, yeah, that's who it is. Okay, I picked up on it. But other than that, the way I thought about this, Barry, was I felt like this was like you go out to a really nice dinner, you know, you get a good steak and you know, at a like maybe a pricier restaurant and you have your nice steak. And then you think to yourself, that was a great meal. You know, how could it get any better than this? And the waiter comes over and says, we got a special on dessert tonight. The chef has made a pie a la mode or, some kind of a special dish. And you come over and you say, well, I don't know if I can, you know, eat anymore because that steak was so good. And he brings over the dessert and you go, let me try some of that dessert. You try the dessert and you go, the fucking dessert is really good. That's the perfect ending. And that's what this was. This was not something all unto itself, but to finish up and just kind of tie a ribbon and put a bow on Breaking Bad, this absolutely worked for me. And it was like a nice dessert at the end of a great meal. What do you think? That's fair?
Yeah, I would go with that too. It's so you didn't. So it sounds like to sum all that up, you really enjoyed it. It was a great finish, a great capper. It wasn't the highlight of the entire cumulative total of all of Breaking Bad, but it was a great way to end things, which is a great dessert.
Absolutely.
Makes sense, my friend. Makes sense.
Yeah. So, okay. So this is a rather abbreviated version of Breaking Kayfabe with Bowden and Barry today. But I do want to point out a couple things. Barry, have you had a chance, my friend, to see the trailer for The Irishman, Martin Scorsese's new film?
Absolutely. Super excited for that as well.
I will just say that I have heard early notices that say, and think about this, that this is Scorsese's best film since Goodfellas, which we're talking Casino, The Departed. There's a lot of fucking movies in there that were really good. And to say this might be the best one. And it was really funny, but I happened to be in Barnes & Noble today and I'm walking past the crime section. Boom, there's that book. I paint houses, or was it You Paint Houses for a Living? That's what this movie is based on. So I am super, super stoked. Al Pacino, Robert De Niro, Joe Pesci coming back for this one. Just looks like an absolutely stellar movie. Looking forward to that one coming out. Then we can finally stop maybe talking about a certain other movie that's been mentioned way too often on certain people's boards. I'm not going to give them credit and talk about the movie I'm thinking about. But, Barry, I will also say before we leave, do you know what significant movie achievement happened on this date 25 years ago?
I'm going to say Pulp Fiction was released.
You are half right. On the same day, Pulp Fiction and The Shawshank Redemption both get released same day. How's that for a that's a perfecta. That's not a trifecta. One and two. Wow, that's a great fucking release day, huh?
Yeah, that's unbelievable too. And I never saw Shawshank, I know, which is one of your favorite movies. I never saw it in the theater. I caught it on cable.
I thought you were about to tell me you've never seen it. I was going to go,
No. Yeah, but I did see Pulp Fiction opening night, and I believed I talked about this story. This was with the girl that was telling me about her her ex-husband breaking in and killing the boyfriend. Remember that story?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Pulp Fiction was the movie that we saw together. So, yeah.
Yeah, two just absolute again, the dialogue in Pulp Fiction and his other movies too, but Pulp Fiction, Reservoir Dogs, the dialogue so incredible. And the story arc of Shawshank Redemption, two superior films. I can't imagine anyone that watches this show that hasn't seen either one of those two, Barry.
Yeah, I agree too. And Jeff, I watched a couple of documentaries over this weekend that I'd like to recommend. We haven't really talked about movies. And Jeff, should we talk about what our top five is going to be next week?
Return of the top five next week. I know you're waiting with bated breath. And folks, we are going to hit you with, tell them, Mr. Rose,
our top five horror movies. So Jeff and myself will bring up, this is based for Halloween. We're in the month of October. Halloween is fast approaching. We are going to share our top five favorite Halloween horror movies. Jeff, as I like to say frequently every week, I've got a list of about 50 that I'm starting to whittle down, Jeff.
I'm thinking Halloween 3 Season of the Witch.
Love
is going to be a strong contender for that one. So, I'm sure the folks will be looking forward to the horror movies that we're going to be suggesting for Halloween with some popcorn, curling up on the couch with the person you love the most, maybe the kids, not another chair so you can fool around on the couch. But I'm sure they're going to like that. Also, we're going to be getting to a new selector of the match of the week. I'm not going to reveal that person because I want them to be surprised, but we have a new candidate emerging for the match of the week selection. And until next week, I would encourage you to follow me on Twitter at Bowdren Jeff, Breaking Kayfabe, a production of the Arcadian Vanguard Podcast Network. Sweet Lou Kippelman on the production duties. And Barry, very happy to announce that, as far as I know, you'll be returning as my co-host next episode. I heard that's a problem on the Arcadian Network. Boom!